I got to tell you, it is, you know, a really, really great pleasure. I won't get into the whole honor stuff, you know. I won't overstate it, but, you know.
Oh, John, come on.
John and I have crossed paths many times through the years, but to have him come to KCSN and be our special guest today, John Hiatt is with us, and we really do mean it when we say thanks for coming by. Now, you've been in this building. You played at the Valley Performance Arts Center across the courtyard. How was that experience for you?
Fantastic. What a hall.
It's a beautiful room.
Beautiful room. Played there with Lyle Lovett back in June.
Yeah, not so long ago. Now, I want to make sure, I had just started then, and I had insisted to the crew, the catering crew, that they make sure that both John and you had the exact amount of crudité on your plate. Did it work out?
I was a little, those little tiny bread breads and the large slices of the luncheon meat. I couldn't. How do you make the? How do you make a sandwich out of that?
Yeah,
Scott?
See, I tried to get him to get it cut into small little cubes for you.
I mean, folding it up, it just
And it hangs over the edge. It's not right. But I just wanted to make sure that you got the same amount that they treated.
I checked.
You.
Okay. Lyle had nothing that I didn't have.
Okay, good. That was important. I just want to make sure I have the due influence on that room that I think I do. On a more, we could obviously talk goofy all day, and maybe we will, but on a slightly serious note, I guess a really serious note, you know, you're considered a prolific songwriter, and certainly you've written a lot of songs. And I was thinking, do you have any idea how many songs you've written, mostly written? Any idea how many?
Sort of written.
Yeah, sort of written.
You know, I don't. Gosh, and I'm sure I've forgotten, you know, 100 or two
but
over the years.
Would it be in the thousands?
I don't think so.
A thousand?
I can't imagine writing 1,000 songs, but, you know, I don't know, 500 maybe.
500?
Yeah, I'm thinking 500 or 600.
500.
Over the years.
I mean, 500 that you'd lay claim to.
I'm including, you know, Beth Ann, which I wrote when I was 12, you know.
Oh, well. That's...
Two chords about the most developed girl in our sixth grade.
Do you remember any of it?
Ooh, Beth Ann, she's a woman. Ooh, she's a woman.
And I understand when you're 12, you know.
Clearly she was.
She's not a girl. She's a woman.
First one we laid eyes on.
Yeah, well, you know, not the last. Let's talk about it as a songwriter, because, you know, you left Indianapolis, you knocked around in Indianapolis, started, you know, doing what you do in the Midwest, trying to get things going in Indianapolis. But you had, I guess, the prescience of mind to, early on in your life, move to Nashville.
Yeah, you know, it was on paper, it was probably an odd choice because, as you say, I was a kid from the Midwest, just, you know, I was playing into rock and roll and then got into folk music. Dylan had a huge impact on me, and the blues, it started through him. I got into the blues and, you know, all the folk singers, whole Vanguard catalog, you know, Odetta and the Farinas and Mississippi John Hurt, people like that. But I was such a Midwest kid, and you'll understand this coming from Cleveland. It was too scary to me to think of even think of going to New York City or Los Angeles. They were just too big and too far away.
Right.
And so Nashville, I had passed through Nashville about a year before, and I'd met this guy, Bob Frank, who was a singer-songwriter. He was from Memphis, and he was a folk singer, kind of blues folk singer. But he was signed to a publishing company in Nashville, Tree Publishing, and they were paying him about $25 a week, not really knowing what to do with him, but thinking, well, for that cheap, maybe if we hang on to him, something will happen. And sure enough, he got a little record deal with Vanguard Records. And so I saw that happen for him, and I thought, well, man, maybe, you know, just maybe. And it's only 300 miles south, you know, of my hometown. So I sort of put that in my brain and went home and spent the next year just planning to bust out of Dodge and come back down to Nashville. And that's what I did. And I went to the same publishing company he was writing for. They said, what do you want? I said, I want $25 a week, just like Bob, you know.
And there's no negotiating.
Yeah, they said, well, okay. You know.
So it starts out, and like many, you know, you get a little traction, you get a little action going, and then if things don't happen right away, doors don't open so fast for you. And you went through a period where you had to really do, you worked and struggled before you started to get some real respect and some real attention and real support from labels. How long of a period do you figure you, quote, knocked around Nashville?
Well, I came in 71, and I really kind of, I was always playing, but not really hitting the road until about, I was there from 71 to 77, and then 76. And then, the end of the publishing deal, I think by the end of the five-year deal, they were paying me $250 a week, which, you know, 10 times what I started.
Yeah, you can live.
And, you know, I could pay my rent and eat, you know, just, but a lot better than on $25 a week. So, but it was, they weren't going to renew because I wasn't getting covers. I wasn't your standard Music Row country songwriter by any stretch. And I'd had a couple covers, Three Dog Night, and I'd actually made a couple records for Epic Records.
Yeah.
And that was through my good friend Travis Rivers, whom I met in Nashville, and he managed Tracy Nelson, Mother Earth at the time.
Sure.
And he got me introduced to Don Ellis, who worked up in New York for Epic Records in those days. Not the horn player, but another Don Ellis. And he and Greg Calbee, who later signed Elvis Costello, I think, to Columbia, they came to Nashville and offered me a little record deal. So I made two records, but nothing was happening. So I sort of left town. I actually moved back home for a year, and I hooked up with a guy from Wisconsin, another good Midwestern guy who had a little booking agency, and he put me out on the road. I spent the next 2 years playing, you know, every little college coffee house, lunchroom, you know, whatever I could get.
Right.
And I was making $50 here, $100 there, you know, sleeping on floors and, you know, the club owner's floor, maybe a gal's floor if I could get lucky, you know, and usually just making enough money to get to the next gig, you know.
Right.
But it was, you know, it was great. I mean, I was learning how to do that. And, you know, some of these lunchrooms, a gig in a college lunchroom is what I would file as character building.
Sure.
I mean, you're sitting on top of tables and they're eating their lunch. They don't want to hear your freaking songs. You know, they want to eat.
A great gig is when you don't get Jell-O thrown at you.
Yeah, exactly.
So, or a co-ed comes up afterwards and thought you were the best ever. You know, that's
well,
probably
that
the
didn't
ultimate
happen.
Gig. Yeah, well, yeah. That would be the ultimate gig,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So around that period of time, you know, as you say, you worked, and you did. Look, there's people that will say there's only one way to attain real success, and it is to do what you did, which is to persevere and to work and hone your craft. And learn how to work in front of an audience and start to gather, you know, a real following. And you started doing that. Can you remember one of the songs in that period when you started to feel like, okay, this thing is connecting both with audiences you were playing from and perhaps with, you know, another label deal, a song that you felt, okay, this is going to be pivotal and perhaps was pivotal for you to take that next step. Was there one you think of?
Oh, boy, man. You know, I sort of a blur what I was even singing in those days, but I remember I had an old song called A Crazy Girl's Hard to Find that they kind of, the audience is kind of, I'm sorry you're so crazy. I'm sorry you're so blue. I'm sorry that this sad old song's for you. Just when we had a good thing going, you had to go and lose your mind. Same girl, they're so easy, but a crazy girl's hard to find. kind of that was a favorite back in the college campus days.
I'm sorry, I'm flashing back on 10 girlfriends. So I obviously
I didn't have any problem finding them.
Yeah, I was gonna say it seemed like they
crazy girl magnet.
Yeah, they were in no short order around me as well. Let's think of a song now. One of the songs that, you know, as time's gone on and you've had success and you've been covered, you know, by a lot of people, and are there any songs in this setting, in the acoustic setting, that you still feel, you know, they come alive in your hands and in your heart when you still play them? Because, you know, some artists say, you know, I've been playing that one so long. And then there's other songs that no matter how many times you've played them, you know the fans love them, and they still mean something to you. Is there one now you could bring out that?
I mean, they all still do. I mean, I don't, you know, I rotate songs out, but I mean, I don't want to play them if they don't come alive, you know. So
you love all your children.
Oh yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, they're kids, and you know, I leave them home and park them for a tour if we're not getting along, you know.
Maybe they got the flu or
drop
something.
Them off at the pool.
Yeah, you know, they need a rest.
Yeah,
know.
They need a
They've
rest.
Been bad.
Go
they
to
need
camp.
A timeout. A timeout for them.
You know, but yeah, I that's, you know, I still live for that. That exciting sort of dangerous moment when you can share, you know, whatever that magic is when you're communicating with the audience or communioning with the audience and vis-a-vis music. It's just such a wonderful feeling.
Why don't you play one now as if and you're ready to hear that early reaction when you go into the opening notes where people are going to go, ooh, one of my favorites.
Oh, boy. Well, I'll play an up-tempo one since we're probably driving. It is Los Angeles,
yes.
After all. We got a kick back in Tennessee when y'all were talking about the Carmageddon, and the first thing that came to my mind is it's always Carmageddon.
Yeah. You know? And by the way, that traffic was the lightest that weekend ever.
Yeah, of course. I woke up in a hotel, didn't know what to do. I turned a TV on, wrote a letter to you. News was talking about a dragnet up on the interstate. They were looking for a Cadillac with Tennessee plates. As I left California, baby, things have gotten worse. Seems a land of opportunity for me is just a curse. Tell that judge in Bakersfield, my trial, I have to wait. Looking for a Cadillac with Tennessee plates. It was somewhere in Nevada, it's cold outside. She was shivering in the dark, so I offered her a ride. Three bank jobs later, four cars hot wide. Cross the Mississippi like an oil slick fire. And if they know what we was up to, they wouldn't have let us in. Now we landed in Memphis like original sin. Elvis Presley Boulevard to the Graceland gates. We were looking for a Cadillac with Tennessee plate. There must have been a dozen of them parked in that garage. Wasn't one Lincoln and there wasn't one Dodge. Wasn't one Japanese model or make. Just a pretty, pretty Cadillac with Tennessee plates. Saw him singing once when she was 17. Ever since that day, she's been living in between. I was never king of nothing but this wild weekend. Anyway, he wouldn't care. Hell, he gave them to his friends. This ain't no hotel I'm riding you from. Nah, it's a Tennessee prison up at Brushy Mountain. Well, your sincerely's doing 5 to 8. just stepping out my time making Tennessee plays.
You know, just sitting here and watching how much you put into that song with this overwhelming audience of two people in the room with you and listening, it reminds me of the absolute richness of detail that you write in your songs. That as I'm listening through the song, I'm capturing all these different little true elements, you know, that are going on in that person's life and through the song, and you even come around and have a little ironic twist to it at the end. What, for those people out there that are aspiring songwriters, you know, and you're so highly regarded as one, how do you approach songwriting? Do you is it a personal experience? Is it a topic that's on your mind? Is a melody get in your head, or is it some combination of all?
You know, it for me, it's always, it's 99% of the time, it comes from the music. I sit down and start playing the guitar. It's just habit. You know, I've done it since I was 11. And I just start, usually it's an acoustic. Sometimes I plug in an electric. Mm-hmm. Harder to hear yourself over electric.
Right.
But I usually just sit down with the acoustic, and there's just something about it. I start playing chords, and it's the same damn chords. I haven't really learned anything new in 30, 40 years. But you know, a melody or a riff will come, and if I'm going to write a song, you know, I'll start singing because I'm not a lead guitar player, and so singing is sort of what I do, and I'll just start singing nonsense. And if I'm lucky, if the muse is there, you know, a line will just pop out. You know, Damn This Town is an example on the new record of, I had that riff. And the chords after. And I had that, I had it for probably the better part of 2 days, and I just would wake up and I would play it, and I was, you know, kind of mumbling along, and then that first line just popped out. Ah, they killed my brother in a poker game. Damn this town, I'm leaving. And I thought, oh man, you know, it's like it just sort of popped out, and I thought, well, here we go. You know, there's the story. You got the character. He got trouble. You know, his brother got killed. I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm intrigued. You know, so that's kind of how it happens.
So it really does become, there is, as you say, there's that, you know, inspiration from the muse. And then that's when the craft comes in, where you start to then flesh out the detail of what
this
song's going to be.
I mean, that's the point at which, as Ry Cooder used to tell me, we get in our little spaceship and take a ride.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens. You kind of go, I'm following the story. Hopefully the listener will, because I'm not really sure where it's going to wind up until I'm done, you know?
And there's a question unto itself. You know, it's been said, and I don't know if this applies to you. I certainly know a great number of songwriters that they never know when the song is finished. And sometimes it's the old paralysis by analysis.
Yeah.
They just keep fixating on, we don't have a perfect, we don't have a perfect. How are you in that?
You know, I'm not that way. I just, if I feel like the story's gotten told, revealed to me, if it's been revealed to me,
right,
you know, sufficiently, then I reckon it's done.
Okay.
You know, I'm happy with that. If I've finished this story and I go, yay, that's, you know, that, wow. You know, how'd that happen? And, oh, that's interesting. You know, then I'm usually like, okay with that. It's like, you know, thank the big kahuna, and, you know, hey, muse, that was fantastic. Thanks for another one, you know, and kind of just let it go.
It's the only way you'll get to 500. You know, if you're going to be obsessive
about
it.
Yeah, you got to keep batting.
You'll never get to 500.
That's right, you know. So.
Well, and speaking of obsessions, you know, we've all had a few. I was telling you earlier, in all sincerity, that, you know, one particular song you wrote, of many great ones that I know and love, you know, it actually, it was as you would hope, I guess, for a listener to suddenly be in the song, and it was chronicling their own life, and that was slow turning, because I had just, you know, gotten out of recovery, and I just was about to have my first son, and he was born, and he's a little kid, and I'm riding with my wife, and I've got my son in the back making all the noise, and I'm listening to slow turning, and it dawns on me, you must be following me around with a camera, because you are writing my life at that moment. And ever since then, it's always become a great song for me, in terms of, you know, really understanding that it's not about you, it's about us.
Yeah,
it's, you know,
yeah,
getting outside of self, yeah, and stuff. Yeah. Do you think you could do a little bit of yeah, slow man. Turning? You give us some sort of version, because I'll tell you, it remains to me more than just a song.
Let me just drop it down. Well, I'll do it in the original key. I thought at first, I was thinking it's a little too early to go up to high. But... when I was a boy, I thought it just came to you. But I never could tell what's mine, so it didn't matter anyway. My only pride and joy was his racket down here, banging on an old guitar, singing what I had to say. I always thought our house was haunted, nobody said boo to me. I never did get what I wanted, and now I get what I need. It's been a slow turning from the inside out, a slow learning, but you come about. A slow turning, but you learn to sway. Hey, hey, hey. A slow turning, baby, and not fade away, not fade away, not fade away. I'm riding in my car, man, I got the kids in the back, 'cause they're banging like a Charlie Watts. You think you come so far in this little bitty one horse town, then she's laughing that crazy laugh, 'cause you haven't left the parking lot. Time is short, and here's the damn thing about it, we're gonna die, gonna die for sure. Well, you can learn to live with love or without it, but there ain't no cure. There's just a slow turning from the inside out, a slow turning, but you come about. A slow learning, but you learn to sway. Hey, hey, hey. A slow turning, not fade away, not fade away, not fade away, not fade away. It's just a slow turning, a slow turning, it's just a slow turning, that's all it is.
Oh man, that just renewed 25 years of personal purpose, so thank you, John. That was unbelievable. Oh man, that one puts me on the top of the moon. Let's turn our attention now to your latest, Dirty Jeans and Mudside Hymns. You know, it's just coming out, and we're playing it here on KCSN.
Thank you for doing so.
Well, and as I promised you, upon leaving, we're going to play the recorded version of Damn This Town. So you can actually hear it in the car on the radio, which is the way, really.
That's still the biggest thrill in the universe.
It's realized then, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you're a kid, that's, you know, it's, I think it's got to be every musician's dream, every songwriter, every singer's dream to, man, if I could just hear my song on the radio.
And I've been fortunate enough to have a few that, you know, were in the car with me when I watched them hear it for the first time, and it never changes.
It never changes.
Every one of them, the validation, the it's that dreamlike connection of it's real now.
Well, it's magic because you're flying out over, you know, over air.
Right.
And people are tuning you in. It's just so cool.
Well, why don't we give someone an example of hearing one of the new songs? Is there one on the record that you feel like at this time of day the voice is ready to handle and you want to, you know, premiere for the folks? And
I'd love to play this song. It's called Adios California. It's about number 9 down the song list, but no, it's number 10 out of 11. But it's kind of just a song about goodbyes, I guess, leaving something and going to another something. Smoky room and a thin blue light. Her arms were pale as white, trying to outlast the night, howling at the moon. Living in the canyon then, hang down Hannah and Whiskey Jim, dirty jeans and mudslide hymns that all began with soon. So adios to California. Nothing to do but turn around. I always thought there's someone coming for you. Only way you leave this town. Pasadena in the rain, eating donuts and reading Twain. How much longer can my brain set itself on fire? You said that's it for me. Have a little faith, it might set you free. But your faith's no good, you see, for me and my desire. So adios to California. Nothing to do but turn around. I always thought there's someone coming for you. Only way you leave this town. Two cigarettes from the package gone. You must have thought about it just that long. I never knew you were so strong. I guess I never will. So adios to California. Nothing to do but turn around. Always knew there's someone coming for you. Only way you'd leave this town. Only way you'd leave this town.
That was certainly an apropos choice, seeing that you're here now. Ironically, you're not leaving California, but you just got here, and you're going to be doing a couple of shows, one at the Grammy Museum and one tomorrow night at the Troubadour. The Troubadour has to have a special feeling for you, because it's so legendary in the people like yourself, committed to the singer-songwriter craft. So many of have played that room, and I'm sure many of your real inspirations, you'll see their pictures on the wall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it's funny, because I'm not 100% sure, because my time out here was somewhat foggy, but but I don't think I've ever played there.
Wow.
I mean, I played the Whiskey, we played the Roxy, we played the old Stardust, I don't even remember that place. We played the Music Machine in Santa Monica, we used to play Madame Wong's East and West. This is back in the early 80s.
Right, when you're trying to crack the new wave
scene.
Oh,
yeah,
sure,
rocking and rolling all over town, but I don't think I ever played the Troubadour. I remember going there and hearing bands. I was there the night the Knack got signed.
Wow.
Playing My Sharona for all the record company labels. It was a hoot, man. It was really, really exciting. But it's just I consider myself a troubadour.
Exactly.
So what a great place to wind up playing finally.
Well, then we got to make sure that the label gets the headshot, and we got to make sure it gets up on that wall. If this is in fact your first time, we have to.
It would be an honor and a privilege to be on that wall. So
leave that to us. That we're gonna make sure that happens for you. And I don't think it's gonna take too much arm twisting with our friends at the Troubadour, because clearly, it's gonna be a great show. And for those of you who have tickets, you're fortunate. And for those of you looking to get tickets, there may be a few left, and you're gonna wanna be there. I certainly know I'm gonna wanna be there to see one of the great songwriters and good people. And when you're in a room like the Troubadour and that combination exists, then you're in for a magic evening. I want to thank you for coming by.
It was my pleasure, Scott.
The new record, we can't talk about it or play it enough. Dirty Jeans and Mudslide Hymns, it's out. As John has said, he doesn't stop until he knows he's told stories in every song. And as you heard him say, there's 11. It goes to 11 on this new record. And I really urge you to get it, because it is yet another great, great record from John Hiatt. Thanks for coming by. And now we're going to give you a studio version of Damn This Town, so you can have the joy of hearing it on the radio. Once again, thank you, John.
Thank you.
You got it.